Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Glad you're with us on this Monday edition. You can follow us on Twitter. You can also listen online. Midday 180 on Twitter. 1045thezone.com is how you can listen online at work. John Feinstein joins us here on the Midday 180. John, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We are excellent.
ESPN.com has an interesting piece, John, where they ask, has Alexander Ovechkin changed this postseason, or has perception of him changed? There are a lot of people talking about him playing his most complete hockey. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's the furthest he's gone, so it's the most playoff hockey we've seen. But you think he's taken it up a notch, or has perception changed over time?
I think it's a little bit of both, Paul. I think that he has become a better playoff competitor gradually through the years. It's not like he just all of a sudden has had a very good playoff. He's had good playoffs in the past. As you said, he hasn't been this far. He's never played more than two rounds before, and now he's playing in his fourth round of this year's playoffs. So I think some of the perception, negative perception about him was legit, that he didn't play his best playoff hockey early in his career. I also think, you know, there's a lot of the Canadian commentators who wield power just didn't like him because he's Russian. And they wanted Sidney Crosby to be the star. And once upon a time, there was a debate about who was the better player, Crosby or Ovechkin. I still think it's Crosby. But Ovechkin has certainly upped his game in the last two or three years in the playoffs. I think the biggest difference this year, besides him playing well, is that they've got a stronger supporting cast on those second and third and fourth lines. And Braden Holtby has really come through when he's had to.
John, this is the very non-scientific question here, but when it comes to Ovechkin, do you think the average hockey fan, if you take their team out of it and you said, who's your favorite player to watch, who do you root for, do you think Ovechkin would be the first guy mentioned?
No, I don't think so, Jonathan.
He comes to mind for me.
Really? Crosby's more fun to watch.
Yeah, but he's also more hated.
Yeah, but part of that's because he's had more success. He's been part of three Stanley Cup champions, two Olympic gold medalists. Ovechkin's never done that. Crosby can be dirty at times. Ovechkin's physical, but I don't think he's dirty that often. No, Crosby can be. He's also been victimized by dirty play at times. Crosby's the golden boy. And when you're the golden boy and you have all the titles and all the awards, there are going to be people who hate you. You know, it's like with any dynasty. And as a player, he's sort of been a dynasty. He's been the player in the league for, you know, most of a dozen years now, except when he's been hurt. Ovechkin is not a pretty player. He is physical. He does occasionally score a spectacular goal. But also, I think, Jonathan, because the Caps have not had any success in postseason before this year, fans tend to overlook him. You know, the neutral type fan tends to overlook him. If they do go on and win the cup, I think that will change.
So, John, we haven't had a chance to talk to you since the J.R. Smith gaffe in game one of the NBA Finals. Just taking it all in now, with days removed from that incident, the way LeBron James handled it after the fact, Tyronn Lue saying he didn't know the score, then had to come back and say, well, I didn't talk to him after the game, so I guess if he claims he knew the score, then maybe he did. Just how all of that was handled also. What do you think of it now, days removed from it?
Oh, so J.R. Smith made a mistake? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. I know it's shocking that he
we're admitting that for him.
It's a small one.
His head would not completely be in the game.
Made.
Yeah.
You know, really it all comes down to the fact that J.R. Smith didn't just fess up and say, I screwed up. You know, I didn't know what the score was. I mean, you can see him saying to James when James is yelling at him, you know, I thought we were ahead. And then he comes up with this cockamamie story about trying to call a timeout or, I mean, come on. He made a good play getting that offensive rebound and gave his team a chance to win the game until he took away that chance by going brain dead. You know, I mean, people make mistakes. We all make mistakes. and when professional athletes who are paid a lot of money make them on the public stage, they're going to be critiqued and far more than the rest of us are when we make mistakes. But the best thing to do, whether you're the president of the United States, who also doesn't admit to mistakes, or you're J.R. Smith or me or you, is say, hey, I made a mistake. Because once you say that, like referees tell me all the time, that when they, particularly in basketball, because those are the guys I talk to the most, when you make a mistake and the coach calls you on it, says, well, what was that call? That was a block, or you missed the travel, whatever. The best thing you can do is say, coach, you're right, I missed it. Because when you do that, there's no response. I mean, in marriage, if you say, honey, I'm sorry, I screwed up, then, okay, you know, she might be upset with you for a little while, but she's going to get over it. You admitted you screwed up. But if you make it up, then it just gets worse.
She gets so tired of it, though, John. She gets so tired of it at my house.
Yeah, you mean admitting mistakes?
Yeah.
Paul?
Yeah. She gets so tired of me admitting them.
Yeah, my wife does too. In fact, sometimes she says to me, don't yes dear me. But you know, it's dragged on this long, past game two now, simply because J.R. Smith didn't just come out and say, hey, you know, I went brain dead for a second, I'm so sorry. End of story.
John, put yourself in LeBron's shoes in that moment. He scores 51 points. He carries that team to a chance to win at the end, and then that happens.
Yep.
What has to be going through his mind in that moment, knowing
I can't repeat the words on radio, Jonathan. The word, what must have been going through his mind. I think the initials are WTF.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, come on. What else can you think at that moment? What is he doing? The score is tied. He gets the rebound. Go to the basket. Pass to somebody underneath. Call timeout. You don't dribble toward midcourt with your back to the basket. You know, it's one of those things where you just, I mean, you stand there, you sit there, whatever you're doing, and then you go, what is he doing? That's the only way. It's like when Chris Webber called the timeout. And which people forget, by the way, on that play, he had already traveled twice and the refs had missed it and tried to call timeout once before. So Webber only screwed up on that play like four times. Although Jalen Rose gets part of the blame too, because he was the point guard and he never came back to get the ball out of his center's hands. So Webber's taking the fall and deservedly, but Jalen Rose, nobody's ever said anything about Jalen Rose going brain dead too and just running down court and leaving his center to try to bring the ball up court, needing a 3-point shot to tie the game. But it's one of those deals where you can't understand it. You just can't understand it. And the only reasonable explanation was I lost track of what the score was. And we've seen it happen at other times. It happened to Derek Harper once, who was a hell of a smart player. So it can happen to anybody. And the best thing to do when you make a mistake, as with anything in life, like I said, is just say, holy cow, how did I do that?
The most underrated part of the Webber play you're talking about is the collective walk from the entire crowd when he doesn't even take a dribble and completely moves his pivot foot before it even gets started. You heard the whole crowd erupt thinking that he obviously traveled in front of them.
Yeah, no, there was no question. But the other thing that was interesting about that play, Chad, was the minute he called timeout, every player on the Carolina team knew they didn't have a timeout and started signaling technical foul. Watch the replay. They're all going, T. And the Michigan players didn't know. And that to me, no knock on Steve Fisher, who's a fine man and a fine coach, but that's the difference between an ordinary coach and Dean Smith. Because Dean Smith had told his players, they're out of timeouts. We have one left, or however many it was. But now I know Steve Fisher said that he told his players they were out of timeouts, and I believe him. But the difference is his players weren't listening.
John, is there any chance LeBron James re-signs in Cleveland unless there's dramatic changes to that roster around him?
I think, you know, it's a chicken and egg thing. I think, Chad, I think there's what the Cleveland people would say to LeBron is, we're going to do everything in our power to give you a better team. You know, they made a mistake with the trade last summer, Isaiah Thomas, because he couldn't get healthy. It was, you know, turned out to be a disaster. Not that Kyrie Irving doesn't get hurt, but Kyrie Irving at least had been healthy in the playoffs the last few years. And, you know, they've got a Kevin Love issue. I don't know what they do with him. But I would think if I'm the Cavaliers, if I'm, I don't know if he's going to negotiate with Dan Gilbert or whomever, but whomever he's sitting down with in a room has to say to him, LeBron, you tell us what you need and we'll do everything in our power to get it for you. Because if LeBron leaves, they might as well not even field the team next year. It's like the Islanders with John Tavares. I got friends who are Islander fans say, oh, you know, Lou Lamoriello. Well, that's all good. But if John Tavares isn't on the team, why bother showing up? Same thing with LeBron, maybe even more in Cleveland.
John, I see the headline from the NBA today that Joe Prunty is the new head coach of the Phoenix Suns. I looked him up. He's been the interim in Milwaukee. He's been with six different teams as an assistant, but I always ask this question every time I see a name that I have to look up across the NBA. Why doesn't the NBA look more to college for their next coach instead of just recycling different assistants or retreads across the league?
Well, Jonathan, that's a complicated and interesting question. Some of it is because there have been some very good college coaches who have failed in the NBA. Rick Pitino failed, John Calipari failed, Lon Kruger failed. Part of the reason why college coaches fail in the NBA is because they usually take over bad teams. You know, most teams that are looking for a new coach are bad teams. There are occasional exceptions to that rule. But for the most part, when you jump from college to the pros, you're taking over a team that hasn't been successful. And coaching in the pros is a very different thing. Now, on the other hand, you know, they tried very hard. The Pistons, the Cavaliers have tried to hire Tom Izzo. Teams through the years have tried to hire Mike Krzyzewski. Years ago, people tried to hire Dean Smith. And my feeling is that if you're given a fair chance, if you're a great coach, you're a great coach. Doesn't matter college or pro. I think all three of those guys would have been successful. I think under different circumstances, Rick Pitino went to the Celtics thinking he was going to have the first draft pick and get Tim Duncan. Instead, they lost the lottery, didn't get Tim Duncan, and plus Pitino's ego just got completely out of control there, hard to believe, in Boston. And he made some really bad personnel decisions because he insisted that he had to control the personnel, didn't have a real general manager. But if I was looking for a coach, for example, the Pistons apparently have interviewed John Beilein. I think and the Pistons aren't that far away from being a good
coach. That'd be great.
And I think, you know, somebody said, do you think John Beilein could make the transition? My answer is John Beilein would be a successful coach at any level. And if the Pistons were to hire him, I'd be disappointed because I'm a college guy and I love having him at Michigan, but I think he'd do very well, given a fair chance. And I think the Pistons are close enough that he would get a fair chance. So I think it's a good question. But part of it is that college coaches, especially in recent years, have shied away from making the jump, especially now that the money for the top college guys is right up there with the money for the top NBA guys. And part of it is also that because of some of the past failures, there are teams that shy away from hiring a college coach.
And don't you have a better chance to win in college at the top jobs? I mean, if you the jobs that are coming open, you mentioned Detroit, but, I mean, would you rather stay in college or go to Phoenix with the way the NBA looks right now?
Phoenix is not a terrible place to live, but having said that, I hear what you're saying. There are two reasons why college guys make the jump, other than if it's a lot more money. Reason number one is they want to see if they can do it. If you've conquered the college game, like if Izzo or Krzyzewski or in the old days Dean had left, they conquered the college game. They'd won national championships. They'd been to multiple Final Fours. So maybe you want to see if you can do it at the next level. The other reason, and the bigger reason, why college coaches are willing to listen to NBA people is because of recruiting. Because recruiting is such a cesspool now.
Yes.
Has been for a long time. I mean, I talked to Izzo about this this past year. You know what a terrible year they had with all the stuff going on with Larry Nassar and the president being forced to resign, the AD being forced to quote-unquote retire. And Tom said, you know, maybe I just throw my hands up and go coach in the NBA and not have to deal with all this. And I would have understood completely if he had decided to do that. But Tom, Krzyzewski, other guys, they like the idea that they can still have a positive effect on kids' lives. I know some people roll their eyes when they say that, but I know these guys well enough to know that is part of their MO.
John, we flipping channels this weekend. I can't blame people if they didn't immediately think to check NBC Sports Network for what game was on Saturday night. You know, at first, whenever I saw the NBC schedule for the Stanley Cup playoffs in the past, I would think, okay, during the week, they want to get their big comedy on or whatever, and they're going to put the Stanley Cup final on NBC Sports Network. But on the weekend, shouldn't that be on big NBC? The fact that it's on NBC Sports Network on Saturday night, that just does not seem like it's something that's great for the NHL.
There was a rerun of Dateline NBC on in its place on NBC, a rerun.
Well, one of the reasons why they moved both the NBA and more so the NHL finals into June was to get them out of the May sweeps. Because the idea was, okay, we know that regular programming traditionally does better than sports programming, unless it's the NFL, in prime time. True of the World Series too. But it's important to the brand that your finals at least be on network television. And you know, ESPN has moved a lot of its important inventory to ESPN through the years. The college national championship game is on ESPN. They had moved the British Open over to ESPN from ABC before they gave it up completely. So there is something, a little bit of a trend in that direction. But Jonathan, you're 100% right. This is embarrassing for the NHL. And you guys know what a big hockey fan I am, but hockey fans get mad at me when I say hockey is a niche sport, and it is. Golf is a niche sport. I mean, people will pay attention to Tiger Woods, but if Tiger Woods is not on a leaderboard, ratings drop precipitously. And so you have to know who you are, but I think whenever the contract is up, you said 2020, I'm assuming you're correct, Gary Bettman's got to walk into a room with somebody and say, our finals have got to be on the network. Whether he goes back to ESPN, which is a possibility, whether he stays with NBC. NBC's had the product for a long time now. But whomever, wherever he takes his product, one thing he's got to insist, whomever he makes a deal with, is our finals have to be on the network because it's embarrassing.
John, in the winning cures all department, Bruce Pearl just signed a contract extension to 2023 at Auburn. The same Bruce Pearl who refused to cooperate with internal investigators at Auburn before the season when they were looking into improper benefits within his program.
Yeah, the FBI thing, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Incredible.
Well, you said it. You said it perfectly, Chad. Winning cures all. As long as you're a winner, people want you around. It doesn't matter what else you may or may not have done. And why did Bruce Pearl get hired at Auburn, even though he was fired at Tennessee, because of not only because there were NCAA violations, but because he lied about them? He's admitted that he lied about them. At least he said he made a mistake. But why did he get hired? Because he's a great guy? Bruce Pearl is a good guy, by the way. I like Bruce Pearl. But he was hired because he'd had great success at Wisconsin-Milwaukee and at Tennessee. He's getting a contract extension because, what, they went 28 games last year? And most people have him in the preseason top 10, preseason top 10. You win, you can pretty much do whatever you want. I mean, it's funny because does anybody really think Nick Saban is a good guy? I don't. But it doesn't matter because he's in the national championship picture every year, so he's a god in Alabama. And if you criticize Nick Saban, Alabama fans will go crazy. But winning doesn't make you a good guy, except in the eyes of your fans.
You mentioned Tiger Woods a minute ago.
I apologize.
Always curious. 75% greens in regulation, which was way up there. 300 average drive, which was way up there. I didn't see much of it, but about 1.8 putts per greens in regulation seemed to undo him. Where's his game out of the Memorial?
You know, Paul, his game's pretty good. I mean, he's consistently played pretty well. Almost every week he's teed it up. I think he's only missed one cut this year. That was in L.A. What amuses me, and this is not unique to Tiger, is when you talk to golfers, and they're not playing especially well, they will tell you, you know, I'm playing really well. I'm just not making any putts. As if putting is a different sport. It's like when pitchers say, I had really good stuff, I just couldn't locate. Well, it doesn't matter how good your stuff is if you can't throw the ball where you want to throw it. So the notion that somehow putting is you know, all these guys who are cheerleaders for Tiger are saying, well, if he can just make putts, you know, well, yeah. If anybody can just make putts, they're going to play better. Now, I think that what was interesting yesterday, and what has been one pattern that would be disturbing if I were a Tiger Woods fan, is that whenever he gets, it seems like this year in his latest comeback, which has been by far his best, every time he gets anywhere around a lead, he starts to go backwards. You know, yesterday I think he birdied two of the first three holes, so he's on the fringe of contention. He's in the top 10. I think it was T7 or something at that point. And then he starts to spin backwards, whether it's because he misses a drive here and there or because he doesn't make putts. And he ended up shooting a 72, even par. Of the top 28 players in the on the final leaderboard, only one player yesterday shot a higher score than 72, and he wears braces. So if I'm Tiger Woods, it kind of concerns me. The putter is always a concern for any player. You have to make putts, period. But what would concern me is it seems like every time he's gotten himself into anything resembling a position to win or seriously contend, he clearly gets tight. And that he's going to have to overcome that. I mean, he used to be 180 degrees the other way. Whenever he got within sight of a win or had a chance to win, he made every putt he had to make.
John Feinstein joins us every Monday at 12:15. John, thanks so much. We'll do it again next week.
All right. Look forward to it, fellas. Thanks.